consistent reputation is what holds me in place
for today. I'll tell the
Welcome to She Struts Radio. I am your host, Deborah M. Ricks, and it is a delight to be with you on this Thursday evening. I so appreciate you being here with me, whether you listen now or you listen later to the archive show. I am delighted that you will that you think enough of me and what I'm doing to listen, because you could do anything else with your time. She Struts Radio really is about giving women, particularly. Every once in a while we have a man on the show, but it's about giving women voice, giving voice to our longings and our hopes and our dreams. And I hear some clicking noises and pain and our deepest heart's desires, and what I do, what we do here at She Struts Radio is support women in being unapologetically vocal, visible, and vulnerable, and as we claim our places in this world. I am Deborah M. Ricks. I am a mother of a soon-to-be graduate of Howard University. I'm very proud of my daughter, Adia. I am an author, an editor, and a coach. And if you'd like to connect with me, please visit me at DeborahRicks.com. I'd love to hear from you. Today we are talking about colorism. And what is colorism? It's the prejudices people can face based on the lightness or darkness of their skin tone. Some people think it's just about based on how dark you are. Maybe that comes to mind when you think about discrimination based on color. As we will discuss during the show, some people feel they are discriminated against. And I use the word feel because I'm not light-skinned. I can't speak for them. Some people feel they are discriminated against based on the lightness of their skin. So this evening, I'm delighted to have a woman that I happened upon on YouTube. I'm on YouTube often. I'm there to watch videos, to post videos, comment on videos. That's my TV today. I don't have a TV, and so I watch YouTube. And I happened upon this woman's channel and got intrigued, and I kept watching and kept watching, and decided that because this topic has come up quite a lot lately in my circles, I decided, well, let me reach out to her and have her on the show. And so she's here. Now, I have her for about an hour. She has to hop off at 7:30, about 7:30. And so the last 30 minutes of the show is an opportunity for you to co-host with me I want to hear your thoughts, your opinions about our topic, the last 30 minutes from 7:30 to 8:30, I mean to 8 o'clock, that is. I know some of you want to watch Grey's Anatomy. So from 7:30 to 8 o'clock is an open discussion. And I prefer that we talk about this topic, continue to talk about this topic. I will have a show in the future where it will be an open show for 90 minutes to talk about whatever you desire. But for the last 30 minutes of this evening's show, you are my co-host, and therefore you get to dialogue with me. Let's have a dialogue about colorism. So let me introduce my guest. Her name is Rashida Strober, and I'm not going to read her long bio. I will read some of it, but you will learn a lot about her during our talk, okay, our conversation. So Rashida Strober, she is the inventor of dark skin activism. She says, for years, dark skin women have been branded the ugliest women on the planet. Skin women have been called every name in the book: manly, burnt, darky, blacky, dirty, ghetto. They have suffered in silence for years, attacked by friends, family, and society. Dark-skinned female beauty discrimination is a big elephant in the room in the black community, says Rashida. It's the topic that no one wants to discuss publicly, yet is talked about within the confines of trusted circles. Some have recognized it as a problem and gave attention to it in popular media. And a body of scholarly research has emerged addressing the issue. Now, you may be familiar with Dark Girls, which is a documentary that was done by Bill Dukes and B. Chancing Berry, and they actually brought the documentary here to Baltimore, and I had the pleasure of meeting one of the producers the night before and the night of the documentary, and that was Dark Girls, and now they have a documentary. I don't know the name of it, but it's about light-skinned women, okay? And so as we talk about colorism, tonight we are talking, focusing in on what it's like to be a dark-skinned woman. And as you will hear, Rashida has also talked to dark-skinned men, and they also grapple with this matter, this issue, but not in the same way, okay? So I won't read much more. She has a long – I will tell you she's produced books, and she has a – she's written a play, and she'll tell you more about that. Welcome to She Struts Radio, Rashida Strober.
Thank you. I appreciate that. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. Can't complain.
Good. And I want you all to know that Rashida is actually in Wikipedia. Now, I looked to see if I was in there yet after I discovered she was in there. And I'm not. So you got to do something. I guess, you know, I was like, she's in Wikipedia. How cool is that? So, I think that's pretty cool. So, Rashida, let's start here. There's much for us to talk about, and you will only be with us, until 7:30. So what inspired you to become an activist around this issue?
Firstly, my life experience growing up, experiencing what I call dark skin mental abuse in my family and also in society. So, that's number one. And then just seeing that it wasn't just me that was a victim of dark skin mental abuse. It was other people that were going through the same thing. And, so back in 1998 at St. Petersburg College, I gave a talk/lecture on, it was Black History Month or Harambe at the time. So I decided to talk about specifically about dark skin. There was a a model, Alec Weck, who some people might be familiar with, an African, actually she's Senegalese. She was on the cover of, I believe it was Cosmopolitan magazine at the time. And black people were saying how black and ugly she was and how she didn't represent black. And it just made me so angry. And I decided to make that the topic of my talk because I myself had experienced that and heard the same type of dark skin insult. So that's really where it's the formal activism started.
So that's the formal activism. Tell us about how you were treated. You call it dark skin mental abuse. So you were abused, I take it, growing up as a dark skin woman.
Right. It's so many instances. My grandmother, she just recently, well, not recently, in 2013, she passed away. And she did not like me because I was dark skin. She showed favoritism. God rest, may she rest in peace. No disrespect to her. I'm just dealing with truth here. She did not like me because I was dark skin. And there was preference given to the non-dark people. It was so clear at the time I couldn't really articulate it as I do now, but I knew that something wasn't right. And then I remember instances of a family member constantly comparing me to a non-dark-skinned person that was, she wasn't even in the family, in my immediate family, but just comparing me to her all the time and say things that let me know that she believed that I was inferior as a dark-skinned young lady with nappy hair. And when I say nappy, a lot of people say, oh, I like nappy. I'm saying nappy in a good way. But she believed that I was inferior to a light-skinned black woman or black girl, young black woman at the time, and she would make these different types of comments. I would see favoritism. That's one of the ways that you really know that dark-skinned mental abuse exists. When you see people in your family getting, you know, favors, different types of things, whether it be money, whether it be praise, status, cars, houses, it doesn't matter. I saw that going on in my family a lot. So, you know, just and then venturing out into school and in society, in schools, you know, that's where it really happens. That a lot happened to me in middle school and high school, and so it just went on in my family, and it was reinforced in society, and it was just this ongoing cycle that I came to the realization that if I do not talk about it, then I might have to go off on somebody, and I can go there, but I don't like going there. I like dealing with stuff intellectually and creatively. So I decided I'm just going to deal with this primarily through the performing arts. That's really where it started. I just decided to take my personal experience as a dark-skinned female and put it into the form of the performing arts. So then from 1998, giving commentary on dark-skinned females and how they're treated, that branched out into the performing arts when I did, when I wrote A Dark Skinned Woman's Revenge in 2006.
So how does a dark-skinned woman get revenge?
Right now I'm getting revenge. I consider me speaking out boldly on it without apology, without worrying about what people think, because I've taken a lot of hits and criticism, but I don't care. I'm just people, they're upset with me because I don't care, but I'm just being honest. I'm just going to keep doing it. I don't care because I'm telling the truth. So that's one way that I'm getting revenge, by not being quiet. That's the thing. I noticed that people want dark-skinned women to be quiet. They do not want them to voice how they've been treated, the preference that goes on, the non-dark privilege. They don't want you to talk about that. And so when you talk about it and when you do it boldly and you don't try to ruffle any, or you intentionally ruffle feathers, should I say, people get upset about that. So, you know, by me doing that and just speaking on it how I want to speak on it, my way, that's getting revenge. That's the intellectual revenge. It doesn't have to be violent. I'm not a violent person. Although I did get into what I call now dark skin fights when I was growing up, but I don't advocate that. I advocate doing it in a way that's going to be productive and constructive, to where other people can learn and you can force other people to think in a different way about, you know, these issues.
So you really don't feel these attacks. You've gotten immune to them, or have you turned it into, is it anger? Let me tell you why I'm saying this. You know, as a dark-skinned woman myself, I know that even if you find a way, because certainly articulating any kind of hurt, and even if it comes out angry, to me is better than silence. Because I, as I said about this radio show, and I can say in my own life, it's time that we speak up about the things that matter to us. And not just dark-skinned women, but women as a group really have been encouraged to be silent about things that hurt them and pain them and to shrink. And that's why women go through life saying, I'm sorry. If you just walk by them, a woman would say, I'm sorry. And because we are really encouraged to shrink, to hide, to play small.
Right.
And even as we, you know, feminism and all that, we're still encouraged to do that. But it still can hurt. And that's why I ask you, are you angry? And if you are, there's nothing wrong with it. So I'm not judging you. I just want to, are you angry about this?
Oh yeah, of course. I've gotten that question a lot. And people have put such a stigma on the so-called angry black woman. But that doesn't move me, because you could call me angry, people can call me whatever. I see it, but I just don't see it. I'm focusing on the impact and not the approval. So you're never going to get people's approval. You know, they're going to say whatever they're going to say. That's not my issue for me to worry about. My issue is to just do what it is that I'm doing in all my different emotions. And sometimes I go through extremes. Sometimes I'm angry, sometimes I'm happy. Sometimes I'm contemplative. It's many different. It's a range of emotions, and so these are the things that, you know, people have to deal with when they create discrimination in society and inflict it on other people. You're just gonna get a range of things happening. That's just the way it is. So yeah, I'm angry. I'm not angry right now, but at times I am angry. And I react off of that anger at that particular moment. I might say whatever it is on my mind, and it might come out of that anger, and I make no apology for that.
And what's the gentleman's name, and that's being generous, that I know there was a lot of contention, you know, there's a fire going between you and him on YouTube, Tommy Sotomayor, is that his name?
Oh, Tommy Sotomayor.
Sotomayor.
Yes.
And so I love that you said you don't care that they call you angry, because, you know, there are names that call us. When I did a YouTube video recently, someone went on and called me some names. I was talking about swirling. And why I thought more black women should swirl. And so the men came on and they started calling me ugly and funny looking, and you're over 50, who wants to swirl with you? And so what I got from that was what any woman who speaks out, or anyone, but we're talking about women this evening, and that is when we speak out and we speak truth, our truth, and they upset people, one way they try to shut a woman down is to call her something that she doesn't, they think she would hurt her. So to call a woman, a black woman, angry black woman, so, you know, really, so what, you're angry? Is there a law against being angry? No. I say, I hope that, as you know, like you said, you experience a range of emotions, and if you channel that anger in a productive, positive way, then it serves a purpose. And many revolutions, positive revolutions, have been started by angry people. So there's nothing wrong with anger, and I appreciate you saying that, because then you just keep moving forward. So now, so you're cool with being called angry. Now, I have this question. So you were talking, one thing about you, you don't care who it is. And let's talk a little bit about Kendrick Lamar. And anybody, any of the celebrities, because you said that you had been talking about Prince as well. But what are your thoughts about, because you have this belief or desire that who would be with who? Share with the listening audience what you hope will come out of your activism, in other words.
Well, the first thing is black people are in denial and they lie and they're not truthful. Not all, but it's enough black people for me to make that statement. That is the number one thing. If we were honest and we told the truth, me and you would not even be on this phone right now. We'd just be dealing with fixing the problem. But they continue to lie. And that is what really spearheads my anger. So in terms of this Kendrick Lamar situation, people, they were so angry and upset with me about what I said about Kendrick Lamar. And for those that are still angry and upset, continue being angry and upset because that's your problem, because I stand by what I said. But the thing is, my issue with Kendrick Lamar is I feel like a consciousness. When a black person says they're conscious, to me, that signifies to me that you are conscious of where you came from in terms of your history, you're a descendant of a slave, but you take it all the way back to Africa. Africa being the cradle of civilization. African people or the human race coming out of African people, dark African people. The majority, you also know that the majority, there's billions of people in Africa, at least a billion. You would know that of those people, the majority are dark skin with nappy hair. That is an indisputable fact. Now, I hear people say all the time that Africans come in all colors. That's correct. But again, the majority of people in Africa are dark-skinned with nappy hair. That phenotype is our classical African look. People want to argue with me on that all day. I don't care. They're wrong. I'm right. And I'm not right because I said I was right. I'm right because this is a fact. This is a historical fact. That's why I'm right. So if a black man is going around claiming that they're conscious, then in my opinion, you should be with the woman that looks like the majority population in Africa, which is a dark-skinned woman with nappy hair. That's what you should be with, okay? So my issue with Kendrick Lamar, he speaks on a conscious level. A lot of people they sent me links to his music that where he's talking about complexion. He's talking about these black social issues, which signifies, again, a level of consciousness. And another thing that angered me about him is I believe he entitled his song, it was either his song or an album, I can't remember which one, but it's one of the two, he entitled it The Blacker the Berry. Given the fact that he's not with a woman that is the blacker the berry, that would mean a dark-skinned woman, the blacker the berry. And also given the fact that that book or that phrase was created out of the book called The Blacker the Berry, written way back in 1929, by a man named Wallace Thurman, who wrote this book about a dark-skinned black woman who was discriminated against socially, educationally, and economically by black people. Given those facts, for him to turn around and speak on, exploit that title that came out of that history, and then your woman is not reflective of that, he's a hypocrite. And I will take this with me to the day I die. I'm not going to change. Because that's just the truth. It's hypocritical. So, you know, I just feel like some of these celebrities, these male celebrities, they know that there's a lot of dark-skinned women out there that are actually supporting them. They like their music. They're buying their music. And a lot of them know that they use a dark-skinned woman. Maybe they might use her in a video like he did, or they might use her in some type of campaign. They know that that's going to make dark-skinned women feel like, oh, okay, this entertainer is in support of us. But then you're a fraud if that's not what you're really living in your life, if you're just using those women for marketing purposes to make more money for you and then go put it back into the hands of someone that don't even look like the woman you got in the video. That makes no sense. Well, it makes sense to them, of course. It makes good business sense. But But you're deceiving and fooling the people. But you can fool some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time. And I'm one of those people that you can't fool and that you can't bully into having an opinion. I have my own opinion, and that is my opinion of him. I think he's disrespectful, and I think that his behavior is fraudulent, socially fraudulent. So that's my whole take on that situation with these so-called conscious black men not living what they speak about.
So would it be okay if he wasn't conscious? Would it be okay if he never did a song called Black of the Berry or an album? Because when I hear that, someone will say to me that I shouldn't wear sister locks or I'm not conscious because I date a white man. And
right.
I understand what you're saying, but I think you can be conscious and still date a light-skinned woman, marry a light-skinned woman. Now, I do understand the discriminatory actions, like many of the videos are light-skinned women. To me, that's a different issue slightly. But I don't know that I would have, you know, I just would disagree with you that you're not conscious because you decide to be with someone light-skinned.
Right, and that's fine. A lot of people that have disagreed with me that they disagreed with me so much that they wanted to kill me. But, you know, again,
you told me that you got, I mean, it's not funny. It's just, what's funny to me is that you got death threats.
I'm speaking on something that directly threatens privilege. I'm speaking on a new paradigm. You know, I like I said, I don't see a black man that speaks about consciousness would get with a dark skinned black woman. That is my new paradigm that I'm speaking on. People don't want to hear that. That's something that they probably would think in their heads, some people, but a lot of people wouldn't want to articulate it. And so when someone says something like that, you know, all these people all of a sudden get offended. But then let me just make a comparison. One thing I notice about white people, European culture over here, white culture in the United States, they base their culture off of European history, their ancient European history, their classical period, classical Rome, the Greeks, all the classical periods in their history. And they elevate the whitest woman with the lightest hair, with the bluest eyes, they elevate that woman to the highest status. We all know they do this. Yeah, they got redheads and brown heads and all that, but the white woman with the blonde hair and the blue eyes is the top notch because they're going back to their classical history and they're elevating their woman. Black people do the opposite. We elevate, and those in the conscious community are doing this. So that's the problem. The ones in the conscious community shouldn't be doing that if they're really conscious about their classical African history. We do the opposite. We say, to hell with the dark-skinned nappy head, that's trash. We don't want that. And we elevate the opposite. That is insane. You're not conscious if you do that. People got disagreeing with me to the cows come home. I ain't trying to hear it.
And it's okay. It's okay for us to disagree. So so you talked about light-skinned privilege. Say more about that. And you said that the people that were trying to shut you down, you got the death threats from. That's what that was about.
Yeah, when I made the comment about, and it wasn't, here's the thing, it wasn't about the woman. I wasn't talking about her because here's the thing, this is very important because people keep trying to throw the non-dark woman in this, and I feel that that's discrimination and selfish in and of itself because dark-skinned women can't seem to have anything specifically about themselves. So that's number one. But the thing is, I am speaking to black men. This is a conversation that I'm having with black men and dark, as a dark-skinned black woman. I want to reconcile the relationship between the black man and dark-skinned black woman because if you look at our history, dark-skinned women were actually the first to be with black men because that's how it was in Africa before the Europeans came. So it's a natural thing for us to be together, but in America, it's been reversed. My husband, I'm getting ready to divorce him, you know, but still, my husband, my ex-husband, soon to be divorced, is pitch black. This man is so dark, and I say that in the highest regard because I like dark black. But me and this man used to go places together, and people would actually ask us if we were brothers and sister, and they would be shocked when they found out that me and him were married, as if to say two dark-skinned people should not be together. It was insane. We got this everywhere we went. It was insane behavior. So that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because here we are. We know what you're saying. There's a lot of truth to it. I don't agree with the Kendrick Lamar thing. That's okay. We don't have to agree. But we know this. Anybody who lives in America, and as you said, there is a tendency for us to lie. We lie about a whole lot of things that we don't want to face. We just lie. I mean, we're just not black Americans. People lie, right? They just lie. So the big lie, as you said, is that there is I won't even call this a lie. It's just this belief that two dark-skinned people shouldn't be together because they have dark-skinned children. That's one thing. And who wants more dark-skinned children? That's really what people are thinking. They may never say it, but they do say it sometimes. And then you have the dark-skinned people, generally speaking, are supposed to, in the minds of folks, prefer to get with a lighter person. It's just expected that you are not going to want someone as dark as you, because then again, if you have children, and even if you don't, it's like you are supposed to want someone lighter, because light is, there's a preference. Now, I was watching a show not too long ago, and they said there's a preference for white. So within our community, there's a preference for light. It, you know, and then when they did this study, this was on Dr. Oz, I think, of all shows, and they were asking black and white people. Black and white people had a preference for white. Okay, so it doesn't surprise me. We have been brainwashed. This has been, since we've been here in America, it has been instilled in us to prefer what looks less like us. So it's not easy to go against that. And when people would see you and your soon to be ex-husband together, they couldn't believe that you would want him and he would want you. So that's really, I think, what's going on there. I don't understand. I would like for you to talk a little bit about, you said that you were getting threats from light-skinned women. And,
right.
And what I got from, go ahead.
Yes, I actually got threats from light-skinned women, dark-skinned women, and black men. It was six people in particular. I still got all the information just in case some crazy stuff happened. But there was this one light-skinned woman. This woman followed me all over. Actually, there's two. I don't know. This lady was really crazy. But anyway, this other one with the Kendrick Lamar thing, she followed me to some articles I had wrote previously for some publications. She followed me to YouTube. She followed me to Facebook. Telling me, basically, she told me she'd come to Florida and do da da da. This woman was so angry. And again, the comment wasn't about the woman. It had nothing to do with her, because the black men, this is what I keep trying to get people to understand. This is not about, as much as y'all want this to be about non-dark women, it's not about them. No, it's about black men. Why? Because black men are the ones that have to wake up and see their dark-skinned sisters as beautiful. That's what this is about. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I have a caller, and I want them to get in before you hop off, okay? So I want them to get in. So you can finish your thought. I understand now better that you're saying you're not attacking or even – Your issue is with dark skin or black men, period. Black men, period. But I'm going to tell you, just as a dark skinned woman, we may have talked about this before when we talked before the show, and that is my experience is that light skinned men are see me as beautiful before dark skinned men do. Because right back to what I was saying, I've had light skinned men and white men who just tell me I'm beautiful and mm-hmm. I mean, like, and treat me better than dark skinned men.
Mm.
And I say that's self-hatred on the part of dark skinned men. That's to me
Absolutely.
Is just a reflection of their own self-hatred. And so to throw this in as well is that one reason that more and more dark-skinned women are starting to swirl, that is, date outside our race, is because they are sick and tired of what you're talking about. Your solution is to try to get dark-skinned or get black men to see our beauty. And I'm not, and I do want to, I want to hear, I mean, do you think this is effective? I mean, because I really don't know if you could change people's preferences, but one thing you can do is you can say, enough of that, and I'll move on and go where I'm celebrated rather than be where I'm tolerated. That's what more and more dark-skinned women or black women are saying, and light-skinned women too, but especially the dark-skinned black women are saying, I'm going where I'm celebrated, and I'm not hanging around waiting for black men to find me beautiful. So, let me get the caller in and see if they, cause they want to probably speak to you before you hop off, okay? All right, so you're listening to She Stretch Radio. We're talking to Rashida Strober. She is the dark-skinned activist, the first, the inventor. And if you don't believe me, go to Wikipedia. And we have a caller, 718-309. Welcome to She Stretch Radio.
Hello?
Yes. Welcome to She Stretch Radio.
Yes, my name is Brandon. And,
hi, Brandon.
And so I was on Facebook talking with Rashida just a few minutes ago about the whole Prince situation, and I actually spoke to her last year with the Kendrick Lamar situation. We was going back and forth on Facebook, and I got respect for her. She's super cool to talk to everybody the way she does, but I completely disagree with just about every portion of what she says. The things that she says, mostly because if she passes them off or she makes the statements as she has on the show today by saying things like, in her opinion, the way she feels, that's cool. That's your opinion. But when she broadcasts it publicly on her Facebook page or whatever, it's presented as these are the facts and this is the way it is. And then that's when I have to debate it, because it's not. It's irrational thinking. Especially with the Kendrick thing and the Prince thing. So that's why I'm here right now. She invited me to debate.
So is there a particular issue that you debate, you know, that you disagree with?
Oh, absolutely. We can start. The most recent one was the Prince thing. So she posted today that go ahead. Hello?
No, that's not me. You go ahead.
All right, so today the topic of discussion was Prince and his preference for light-skinned women or whatever, which I don't agree with, and many other people on our post disagreed with, because you can't say that as a fact, because we don't know every woman he's dealt with. Maybe his wife was light-skinned, but there's many people on the post who says he was in a relationship with I forgot what they said her name was. And she's dark-skinned. And his previous girlfriend was dark-skinned or whatever. But he's an entertainer, and we know how they get down. They get all kind of women. So we don't know exactly what type of women he was dealing with. And she posts a lot of pictures of him with these light-skinned women, a variation. So anybody could do. Anybody can go and grab a picture and say this is what he was about. But you don't know that it's not facts. So to present it as facts, is irresponsible. If you were a journalist, you couldn't say those things and present them as facts, because you can't prove them. There's no stats to back it up that are legit. And so to make that claim about that man, or any other man for that matter, that so many black men or black men only or prefer light-skinned women, you can't. There's no way to prove that. There's no way you can say that.
Well, what's your preference?
My preference is women. Period. I've dated dark, I've dated light, I've had situations with women of different races. I don't care. I love women. And if your personality and everything is fine and we connect and we mesh well, then we can be cool.
So you don't think that So let me ask you a question. So you have not noticed, or you don't think that there are any black men, or that the majority of black men, you don't think that the majority of black men prefer light women over dark women?
No, I don't. And the reason, the reason being is, what are you basing your information on? If you're basing it off of what you see on TV.
Well, I respect your answer, so thank you. I respect your answer.
Let me respond to him, because I'm sitting back here listening to this foolishness. And this is what I'm talking about when I say black people, the first order of business is to quit lying. Quit lying. That's what makes me angry, because we lie all the time. We want to sit here and act like Prince, rest in peace, his preference was not non-dark women. When all this man was seen with in public was light-skinned women. When all this man was mainly seen with in his videos and his music was light-skinned women. Come on, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. And if I'm lying, you refute me. Go get the pictures. Yeah, I saw people coming on there saying that he dated a few dark-skinned women. They named about three. Okay, but the majority, I said preference. I said the key word, preference. And I don't mean to yell, but I'm just sitting up here listening. I was listening, taking it all in. And I'm saying the same thing. Here we go again with the deflection and the lie. The man's preference was non-dark women. That is fact. That is clear. What is that based on? On all the women that we've ever seen him with. Most of the women that we've seen him with, should I say, in public. The women that he married. The two women that he married. The women that were in his videos with him. Come on, can we be honest here? We're not going to ever get nowhere.
Regina.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
Regina, we
Hello.
Know people lie.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Give me a minute. Regina, people lie. And you know what? That's on them. It's not. There's no need for you to let your blood pressure go up, because people lie. Let them lie. You do your work, and you do your work. That's it. You can't change the people want to live in their bubble. Whatever.
Let me throw something else out there. I gotta throw this out here. He talked about proof. This is what I'm gonna say to you, Brandon. Go do the scholarly. Go do the colorism. Scholarly research. One person that is like the authority in that field, she's a light-skinned woman. Her name is Dr. Margaret Hunter. And she and others have proven that black men do have a preference for light-skinned women, and that it started back in slavery. It started back in slavery and during Reconstruction. So this is proven with empirical research. It's real.
Rashida. Beloved.
Hello?
This man has eyes. All the people who listen have eyes. We live in America. We don't have to read a book to know that there is a preference. But it doesn't mean that dark-skinned women don't. Let me say this. As dark-skinned women, we need to love ourselves. I'm not going to waste my energy trying to get anybody, black, white, male, female, to accept me. I'm going to energy accepting, loving the border. Now, it may not always be easy, because we live in a culture. There is white privilege. Now, I got a clip. Lupita was talking about this very issue. And if people want to live in denial, let them live there. You do your work, but for you to, you know it's not because of that the person hasn't read something. They see. Let me say something about Prince. I don't know that he dated, who he was involved with. I didn't follow Prince that closely. But one of the things I had a brother say to me that, he was involved with a light-skinned woman prior to us getting together. And he told me after we were together for a while, he said the reason he treated her the way he treated her was because she was light-skinned. He was so happy to have a light-skinned woman. I've had other men say things to me. I've heard other women, dark-skinned women and light-skinned women, like, you know, light-skinned women, I don't have anything against them. If you got a privilege, you know, you got a privilege. But I don't, like you said, I don't hold it against the women.
And I really frankly ain't holding it against your men anymore. I'm just making sure that where I am celebrated, not tolerated. If a black man don't want me, so be it. I really ain't going to expend no energy on it. But let me say this. Please, it's not about whether these people read books or not. And I don't mean you, Brandon, personally. It's about people want to live in their world and let them live there. Now, you can keep doing your work, but I encourage you not to, I mean, you know it's not about whether you're reading the book or not. And one of the things is that a black man might, the men who have a preference, and I'm not talking about all black men, but the men who have a preference for light-skinned women, they might sleep with a dark-skinned woman and may marry a light-skinned woman, take her out in public. So you may see Prince out with the women that he feels they're eye candy and they raise his status. The men get with women that they think will raise their status, make them look good. Men will tell you that. So if they think a light-skinned woman is going to do that, that's what they're going to take out in public. Now, back to the self-love, though. If we happen to be, happen upon a man who thinks that our skin is not beautiful enough to take in public, then we should dismiss him and be with the men who will take us in public. And let me see if anybody else wants to weigh in on this conversation. Thank you, Brandon, for your comments.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you. I want to hear somebody else then. Thank you. Okay, let's see. I have another caller. Let me get you in. All right. 271-443-271. Give me a minute. Getting a little warm in here. Okay, 443-271. Welcome to the G-Stress video.
Yes, hi. How are you? Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
And hi to your guest.
Hi.
Hello. I apologize. I tuned in a little bit late, but I think I've gotten the gist of the conversation. And I guess really I wanted to make a comment and maybe ask a question. I put something in Facebook, and I was asking for you to talk about maybe a little bit about your views, your perspectives about conditional love and unconditional love as it relates to your advocacy. And also, what is your bounce off from angry? And then you can talk about that as you please. But I guess my statement is, I would say that my skin is dark, and a lot of the things that you spoke about, I've experienced in some way, you know, as I've grown. But I had an interesting thing happen in my life that has given me some perspective that I just wanted to share with you. I'm blind. I'm totally blind. And I've lived in other countries, and I've begun to have the experience of understanding, relating to people, for me, has nothing to do with the color of their skin, and no longer the color of my skin, because that's a non-issue for me at this point. And so my whole universe has transformed as a result of that. And I'm not saying that all the things that you talk about don't occur and people don't have those feelings and those thoughts. It's that I have a different relationship with them all. And I've come to understand that this life is about understanding who you are, walking through different doors, wearing different cloaks, if you will, to discover who the essence of you is and to portray that and to bring the love of your essence into your experience. And that's why I ask, what's your bounce off from angry? Because what I know, and this is probably something that most of us heard when we were kids, that honey is going to attract more than vinegar. And there's more to that saying than just that, but that is to let us understand that when you're doing whatever you're doing and sharing whatever you're sharing, and you're doing it from that pure positive essence of who you are created from, who this world is created from, who made you the being that you are that has no color and no form, it's vibrational, that speaks to the world at large. It speaks to us individually. And so that's what I wanted to say, and then I'll listen to your remarks.
Thank you, Marguerite. Very good point. Very good point. Rashida, you want to respond? Rashida?
Can you hear me?
No, I didn't.
Hello?
I didn't hear. I can hear you now.
I wanted to make sure I understood the sister's question, because when she first began speaking, I didn't know if she was addressing her question to you or if she was addressing the question to me. So I just wanted to make sure that I understood what she was asking so that I could answer her.
Yes, my questions are to you.
Okay. Would you mind asking me the question again so I make sure I understand exactly what you...
Absolutely. I wanted to hear your perspective and your views on conditional love and unconditional love as it relates to your advocacy. And
okay.
I also wanted to know, what is your bounce off from angry? And I don't know if you heard the rest.
Let me answer your, I'm here.
Okay.
My bounce off from angry is to do exactly what I'm doing right now. Other people have a problem with angry. I don't. I think anger is. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm not saying that there's a problem with it. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just asking, what is the bounce off? I'm not saying there's
exactly
a problem with angry. I applaud angry. I think it's very good. I'm just talking about living in it. What's the bounce off of it?
For me, and I can only speak for myself, bounce off is to do exactly what I'm doing right now, is to advocate in the way that I'm doing it, is to speak out on how I feel about dark-skinned female beauty discrimination through commentary, through plays, through books. That's my contribution. That's my bounce off from angry. Because it used to be fighting and wanting to get violent with people when I was younger. But now it's just to, you know, do it through entertainment.
So what would you want us to do? How would you want to see, what information you'd like to see? What would you have us take from it? You know, and then I'll let you speak. And as I said, the conditional and unconditional love, I want to hear your views as it relates to your advocacy. And then I'll be quiet.
Right. The overall goal is to get the black man to come back to the dark-skinned woman in balanced numbers. Now, I'm not so crazy as to think that they're not going to black men are not going to date or marry light-skinned women, but I want a balance. I want the little girls that's coming up in school, for example, to not be called black and ugly or not to be looked over or not to have their self-esteem trampled upon and then grow into a woman like me. I want that to be eliminated, and I think that starts with the black man. I think the black man can solve that problem. And so speaking about the unconditional love, my unconditional love is towards black men. I love them unconditionally, and that's probably the number one reason why I'm doing this, because I love them so much. I feel like they are in the wrong place. I feel like their minds are not right, and they need to come back. And, again, this is my way of yes, I'm going to use the word making them come back, because I do believe that you can do that. Just like they were made to go away from us, they can be made to come back.
Okay, so then that's a condition. So you do have a condition. So I want to know
what do you mean? What do you mean by a condition? What do you mean by me having a condition?
There's a pure essence of love. There's a pure essence of joy. And there's love that has a condition. I'll love you if. I will not love you if. And
love you if what?
When you were describing to me what was happening as a dark-skinned person, and I told you I can relate to that. I've experienced a lot of it. But it's a condition. It's like people feel like they can you know, relate to someone else because they either have or they don't have something. That's a condition. That's conditional love. I'll love you if, or I'll withhold my love if you don't have the conditions that I'm asking for. And so that's what I'm talking about. It's conditional love. There's a condition to get it. Unconditional
love.
I don't see what I'm doing as conditional.
I don't see it in that way. I see it as the opposite. I feel that black women in general have been very loyal to black men, and we always stick by them. I may speak about negatively about these black men and call them out, but at the end of the day, I love them unconditionally, which is, again, why I'm doing this.
Let me jump in here for two reasons, actually three reasons. One, you have to hop off. Do you need to have to hop off?
In about 3 minutes. Oh, gosh. That time went by so fast.
That's what I thought. So thank you, Marguerite. Your point is well taken. Thank you so much for your point and listening. I appreciate you. And we have another call, and I want him to have an opportunity to talk to Rashida. And as I've piped him in, I want to say this to you, beloved Rashida. I'm saying this to you. I have been angry myself about things, and I have voiced those. That anger. And what I will say to you, and I don't expect that I feel that you're really interested in how you're proceeding, but I do know that ultimately anger and does not draw people into us. It doesn't draw them close to us. It pushes them away. So if the goal is to have black men see black dark-skinned women as beautiful, then we have to show up as beautiful. We have to show up as beautiful and kind and gentle and loving. And sometimes I'm not that woman, but I do know that when I'm not that woman, what I attract to me is anger, negativity. I don't attract love.
Well, you know, actually the reverse has actually happened to me. The reverse has actually happened to me since I've been on this campaign. I've actually gotten a whole bunch of black men trying to come date me. I get it so much I can't even handle it. It's the craziest thing ever because I have to.
Are they the kind of men? I mean, they may be, but are they the kind of men that you would really, I don't know, maybe you would want, but I know negativity.
Yeah, they are.
And anger,
a lot of them are.
It usually draws negativity and anger. But if that's working
for you. I haven't experienced that, to be honest.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me get this other caller in. 443-418. She's fresh
radio.
Hi,
Deborah.
Hey,
Dolphin. Hi, Deborah. Hey, you know, if those men told you you was beautiful, they told you the truth because you are beautiful. I have a question.
Thank you.
Do you think, I agree with what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. No, 100%. There is this bias towards the lighter-skinned women. But do you think that would exist over in, let's say, Nigeria?
Yes, because I'm glad you asked that question. There's a professor from Ghana that I know very well, and we were speaking on the subject of colorism. His mom owns a store over there, or she owned one at one time, and the hottest selling product was the skin lightening cream. And he also told me that the women, I said, why? Because, you know, skin lightening is a huge problem over in Africa. I said,
why do these
women lighten their skin? And he told me because that's what the men want. They know that that's how you get a husband quicker. So they go and they lighten their skin. It's true. I have a Nigerian friend that lives in Tampa. I go to his store. His wife, you can clearly see she lightens her skin. His store is filled up with skin lightening cream. So the reason is from an actual African person that, you know, from the continent, is because the women are trying to look good so that they can get a husband, and one of the ways that you do that is by having light skin.
Yeah, so, like I say, I agree with you 100%, but I don't see any solution. And, you know, I can feel your pain, if you want to say, and your anger, but I just don't see any solution to it.
Let me say this real quick, because I do got to go. But here's the thing, and I really want people to, most people are not going to think about this, because when I say this to people, they just kind of write me off and don't listen to me at all. But let me say it like this. If you get a chance, there's a book called Manufacturing Consent, and it's written by a guy named Noam Chomsky. And his basic thesis in that book, and there's some other authors as well, but his basic thesis is this. The United States government, for example, they do not use brute force anymore to make people do what they want, like they do in other countries. They use the media and propaganda, and they do it so effectively that they control the minds of the people to where they don't have to use brute force. So what I'm saying is that if that is the case, if this whole preference thing, which has been constructed through media and other means, you can construct the preference to be something different. It can be done. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. But over prolonged periods of time, if you go and you study certain movements, you see, let me just throw out another movement that did it, Planned Parenthood. That took a long time for them to get people to buy into what Planned Parenthood was all about. It didn't happen overnight. Let me throw in the gay rights movement, same thing. So if people really pay attention, which most people will not, because I think they think that I'm just probably the angry black. Well, I think that. It's okay. Yeah. That's why I write and do my plays and commentate. I work. I continue on. But that's the thing. It's all about continuous propaganda, speaking on these things. You have to continuously do it, even when you're tired and you don't want to have to continue. And it is working. I can see the game. I've seen a lot of games.
So let me say this before you go. There is a book called Power Versus Force. And so I hear what you're saying. So when you try to force someone to do it, they're just going to rebel anyway. Power is really actually, there's all kinds of ways that we inspire, if you will, people to buy certain cars, to buy things and to go certain places and to eat certain foods and to even find certain people beautiful. Here's what I say. Lupita, one thing that I think that happened with her and Alec Weck is that they showed up on the scene and they just showed up so beautifully that and Michelle Obama. So when you look at women and some women are saying that Michelle Obama, she's had an impact on how black women are starting to really be seen as more beautiful, even though people may not be talking a whole bunch about it now. Some of these women are saying that white men are checking them now. They're really checking for them because they see Michelle Obama beautiful, elegant, smart, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying to you is, and I know that this to be true, that there are in some ways our anger feels like force to people. Versus when you just keep showing up as Rashida and talking about these issues, but in a way that you heal your heart. You heal your heart in such a way that it's not filled with anger, but it's just, you still can speak the truth. You can say the same thing, but not in anger. Because when it comes out angry, I've been there where I speak angrily and I attract to me anger. So what you're doing is beautiful, but how you're doing it, you may say men are coming to you, but what you want is not just for them to come for you. You want them to come for dark-skinned women, to see dark-skinned women as beautiful. That's how I see your dark-skinned women or dark skin is beautiful campaign. You want.
But they are. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. They are. They're not. It's because it never was about me. It just happened as a result of me doing what I do. But they are. I know black men who have personally came to me and have told me their story of how they went from non-dark to dark. So there's gains. They may be small, and then everybody has their own way to contribute. Hey, you know, this person does it their way, that person does it. It's no one way to do it. So, you know,
I
applaud all of those who, you know. Yeah.
But I do know one thing. I've been there with the anger, and the anger, I don't know about you, but I can't get in the fight. So you may have been fighting physically at one time in your life. Now, if it doesn't feel like a fight now, you know, it's like, do you want to fight even though this is not a physical fight? It's still, you know, when this guy Brandon was on and then you started yelling and you, so it's still a fight. And do you
it's an intellectual fight.
I don't run
from intellectual fights at all. I love it. I love it.
Okay,
I thrive off of intellectual fights.
And I appreciate you coming on the show. I can't take it. I'm done with the whole
fighting. All right. Well, thank you so much, and you have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Thank you. And right. Do you want to all tell right. people how they reach out to you?
Sure. I'm on, everybody know, you can find me on Facebook, YouTube, thedarkskinactivist.com. You can check out, I got a new book coming out, Darkism, 25 Ways Dark-Skinned People Are Discriminated Against. Have the play A Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge, also turned into a book, Dark-Skinned Woman's Revenge. I have How to Be the Hottest Dark-Skinned Chick on the Planet, which is the first motivational book in the world for dark-skinned women. I also have She Black But She Ain't Ugly, A Dark-Skinned Girl's Triumph, and that is an audio book, and it can all be found at my website. Also have the show coming out, Rashida Raw, Burnt Black Crispy Biscuit. That's coming out in Tampa, Florida, and that will be live streamed. So.
Wow. Thank you, Rashida Stover. Have a great
Thank
evening.
You. How are you too? Bye-bye.
So we have 30 more minutes. I hope that you will hang with me because I would like for you to be my co-host. I'd like for you to weigh in. Just have your comments. I would love to hear what you have to say. What your thoughts are. I have a couple of clips I'd like to share. And let's just do this. We have 30 more, you know, a little less than 30 minutes. But it's such a hot topic for me, mainly because it is something that we don't tend to talk about. And it doesn't matter which side that you fall on. It's just important that we have these sort of conversations. So I'm going to play a little something, and then we'll be back. And press 1 if you'd like to share your opinions or ask a question.
And maybe every other day,
listening to She's Dutch Radio, and I would love to hear what you have to say if you have a question or a comment. And I know that you were on already, Dolphus, but once you press one, it never goes away. So I don't know if you have another comment or a question. But we were talking about colorism, and that was a little heated, so I had to kind of myself in. So what are your thoughts? I have a clip that Lupita, she shared, I don't know if you've heard her speech at the Essence Women in Hollywood talk, and it's really, really beautiful and powerful. And if, of course, I can get it up, I'm going to play it. And let me know your thoughts. Some of the things that Rashida talked about, she talks about, pretty heartfelt speech. So
I received a letter from a girl, and I'd like to share just a small part of it. Dear Lupita, it reads, I think you're really lucky to be this black, but yet this successful in Hollywood overnight. I was just about to buy Densha's whitenicious cream to lighten my skin when you appeared on the world map and saved me. My heart bled a little when I read those words. I could never have guessed that my first job out of school would be so powerful itself, and that it would propel me to be such an image of hope in the same way that the women of The Color Purple were to me. I remember a time when I too felt unbeautiful. I put on the TV and only saw pale skin. I got teased and taunted about my night-shaded skin. And my one prayer to God, the miracle worker, was that I would wake up light-skinned. The morning would come and I would be so excited about seeing my new skin that I would refuse to look down at myself until I was in front of a mirror because I wanted to see my fair face first. And every day I experienced the same disappointment of being just as dark as I had been the day before. I tried to negotiate with God. I told him I would stop stealing sugar cubes at night if he gave me what I wanted. I would listen to my mother's every word sitting right there and never lose my school sweater again if he just made me a little lighter. But I guess God was unimpressed with my bargaining chips because he never listened. And when I was a teenager, my self-hate grew worse. As you can imagine, happens with adolescence. My mother reminded me often that she thought I was beautiful. But that was no consolation. She's my mother. Of course she's supposed to think I'm beautiful. And then Alek Wek came on the international... a celebrated model. She was dark as night. She was on all the runways and in every magazine, and everyone was talking about how beautiful she was. Even Oprah called her beautiful. And that made it a fact. I couldn't believe that people were embracing a woman who looked so much like me as beautiful. My complexion had always been an obstacle to overcome, and all of a sudden Oprah was telling me it wasn't. It was perplexing, and I wanted to reject it because I had begun to enjoy the seduction of inadequacy. But a flower couldn't help but bloom inside me. When I saw Alek, I inadvertently saw a reflection of myself that I could not deny. Now, I had a spring in my step because I felt more seen, more appreciated by the faraway gatekeepers of beauty. But around me, the preference for light skin prevailed. To the beholders that I thought mattered, I was still unbeautiful. And my mother again would say to me, you can't eat beauty. It doesn't feed you. And these words played and bothered me. I didn't really understand them until finally I realized that beauty was not a thing that I could acquire or consume. It was something that I just had to be. And what my mother meant when she said, you can't eat beauty, was that you can't rely on how you look to sustain you. What actually sustains us, what is fundamentally beautiful, is compassion for yourself and for those around you. That kind of beauty inflames the heart and enchants the soul. It is what got Patsy in so much trouble with her master. But it is also what has kept her story alive to this day. We remember the beauty of her spirit, even after the beauty of her body has faded away. And so, I hope that my presence on your screens and in magazines may lead you, young girl, on a similar journey, that you will feel the validation of your external beauty, but also get to the deeper business of being beautiful inside. That There is no shade in that view. Thank you.
Your thoughts on that? What do you think? You heard that, Dolphus?
Oh, yes, yes. A very inspiring and very touching. I can imagine that young child wanting to be light-skinned. I remember an experience from my childhood days where we actually, I think one of my sisters had said that we could wash and you wash it and then you become, you know, this white person that we all in the tub washing, you know. But of course, it never happens. And then, so what do you do? Do you accept that or do you look for role models? I guess color can be a hang up to some people, and to some people, it's not so much of a hang up. Don't you think?
Yeah. Rashida told me when we talked, I think it was Monday, that she gets calls from dark-skinned men, and many of them that call her suffer from depression, and they feel like they're discriminated against at work. They don't focus as much on the relationship piece, but at work, that's where they feel discriminated against because of their dark skin, and she said the skin, because a lot of them, she said, suffer from depression as a result of it. But what you say is, see, here's the thing that I get that that this colorism exists. It really does. Yeah. I mean, but
it does.
What I remind myself sometimes is that, okay, whatever this condition that we think makes us less than, that God created me just like God created the other person. Okay, so
right.
It's like, or the other people that don't look like me. And so you really have to have a conversation with yourself, and you really have to find a way to accept yourself. I'm not saying it's easy if the world is telling you you're not good enough or you're not pretty enough or you're not, you know, that because of your skin color, you don't get the promotion or whatever. Does this colorism exist? Yes, it does. How then do we deal with it as an individual? Now, her method is her method. It really would wear me down to have to fight all the time like that. That would wear me down. That's why I shared with her what my thoughts, because I know what her intention is, but I'm not sure about her method. But if she, you know, maybe at some point she may reconsider, because it just sounds like it's just a constant fight trying to make black men, if you're trying to make black men see dark-skinned women as beautiful, then it really makes sense to show up as beautiful as possible. And,
you know, I know lots of men, and I've seen, you know, lots of brothers with dark-skinned women. I mean, I've seen lots of girls with dark-skinned women. I grew up in a place where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, light-skinned sisters. There was quite a few, but there was not as many as dark-skinned young girls. I mean, that's
so,
what it was.
But you're missing a piece of it. So it's not that men are not with dark-skinned women. That's not completely the issue. That's not the entire issue. Part of the issue is this. The dark-skinned men, say, you know, a dark-skinned man, it could be, let me flip it. So let's say a woman is with you, right?
Okay.
But you get the feeling that she would, I'm saying a woman, period. I'm just giving you, let me set this scenario up. So let's say a woman is with you, right? And, but you get the feeling that she must prefer a different kind of man. She's with you because maybe, let's say you were able to give her a lot of money, but she really is with you because of the money. So let's say you feel that. You feel like she wouldn't be with you if you ran out of this money. You no longer had the money. She wouldn't be with you. She's not really with you because she thinks you are handsome or that she loves you or whatever. She's with you because of your money.
A woman may, a dark-skinned woman, and this may not be the best, you know, scenario, but so I, as I said earlier in the show, I was with someone, and he told me that he was, the woman he was with before, she was light-skinned, and I saw how he treated her, because I knew them when they were together, and he said he treated her that way because she was light-skinned, and he was really just so happy to have what he called the red bone. And you know, you used that term before yourself. So
right.
There's a pedestal that lighter skinned women have been put on, and dark skinned women are not oblivious to this. We are aware of that. So to be, it's like if you're with someone, but you think he would rather have someone who looks another way, who doesn't look like you, that doesn't feel so good. He may be with you, but is he 100% happy that he has you and he thinks you are beautiful? So that's part of it. Every woman wants to feel like the man that she's with thinks she's beautiful, you see, and that he's happy. He feels like he has a jewel. So she doesn't want to just be with him. She wants to feel like he's like, oh, I got me a true, you know, I got a catch right here. I'm proud to be with her. I'll take her anywhere. You see what I'm saying?
Okay,
so it's not just being with the woman. So that's the other piece. Now, Rashida might feel like, oh, God, I want black men to come back to dark-skinned women. That's not a big issue for me. Because as I said earlier, is that I know a lot of dark-skinned women, they're just completely, like, no longer looking for black men to check for them. They're really just turning to white men and Asian men. They're just, like, done because, you know, they haven't gotten the love that they want from black men. And these are primarily dark-skinned women, brown to dark-skinned women.
Okay. But the lighter-skinned women tend to be more successful in their relationships. Is that it? And maintaining, holding
on
to
them? Well, I don't know about them more successful. It depends on what you call successful. I don't know that they're more successful in their relationships, but If two women go out, a dark skin and light skin women go out and they look identical. Let's say they can look identical, dark skin, light skin women. They can look identical, but for their complexion. Chances are that the black men are going to be drawn to the light skin woman. And fortunately for the dark skin women, and I do mean fortunately for the dark skin woman, white men be drawn to her.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, we are not in the cold. More and more dark-skinned women are saying, "Well, at least somebody's checking for me, you know. At least somebody is, and now at least I have some options now." And bye, Felicia.
Right.
So that's what's going on there, you know. And it's not, you know, and light-skinned women have their challenges, so they say, and I say so they say, and I'm not denying it. It's just that I'm not a light-skinned woman, so I can't speak on it. But I have a clip for that, but I don't have time to share it. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And but I really appreciate you listening and chiming in. Mm-hmm. So as a dark-skinned man, have you experienced any of these kinds of, any of this stuff that we're talking about?
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, I grew up in the South. You know, I grew up in Gainesville, Florida. So, of course, I mean, I was very aware of colorism. Even in school, it seemed that the lighter-skinned children were like, smarter. You know, like, these were, like, in the group, you know, seventh grade. They were, like, in 7-1, and then the next group was in 7-2, and I was in 7-3. And I was in 7-3 because I figured, you know, well, I'm not as smart as, my skin is not as light as those upper, you know, guys above me. So, yeah, I'm very aware of colorism and been living with it for a long time. I've been really self-conscious. I was really self-conscious around, white people. I was very, very self-conscious there. But over the years,
well, you know what? Because we're drawing up close to the show ending, they actually define colorism as prejudice within the black race. So
Oh, really?
Anything beyond that is, because we were talking about within the race, but have you experienced it with women? Have you felt like women prefer lighter?
Yeah, I had one experience that I really remember, and perhaps there were others, but I was just a teenager at that time, and I had a friend who was very light-skinned. I met this girl, and I was talking to her right at the library, you know, and I thought, you know, things was, you know, going well, and like we was going to hit it off. Man, I had a girlfriend here, and then my friend walked up, James walked up. And everything changed. You know, she was like a 360 degrees. Her eyes were no longer on me, and her eyes were like focused on him.
Uh-huh.
He was a light-skinned guy.
Right. And, yep. And that does happen. I know a couple of women and say they prefer light-skinned men. So it happens also for men as well. Not as much, because it's not as much of an issue in terms of with men. The thing is that what pulls women with men is usually money and power. So you can be dark-skinned, short, fat, whatever, you name it. If you got money, and power, you're going to get yourself the woman. A woman to two, three. But, you know, for women, our power is in how we look when it comes to who we end up with. So a woman that doesn't have much money, but if she drop dead gorgeous according to what men think, a man will swoop her up and put her in a mansion. So that's why the beauty industry is so rich, you know, because of beautiful. So it's been a delight. Thank you so much.
Enjoy it.
I hope you will continue to tune in. Thank you, listeners, all of you. Whether you listen now or have been listening this evening or you're going to listen to the archive show, I thank you. You've been listening to She Struts Radio. And I am your grateful host, Deborah M. Ricks. And I hope you will continue to tune in. And please decide to follow She Struts Radio. Just go there so you can get the notices of the upcoming shows. All right. And so, whatever you do, be kind to yourself. And I love you.
Love you too.
Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine is. Brown skin, up against my brown skin, need some every now and then. Oh, yeah. Where are your people from? Maybe Mississippi or Ghana. Apparently your skin has been kissed by the sun. You make me want a Hershey's kiss, your licorice. Every time I see your lips, it makes me think of honey coated chocolate. Your kisses are worth more than gold to me. I'll be your almond joy, you'll be my sugar daddy. Brown skin, you know I love your brown skin. I can't tell where yours begins. I can't tell where mine. My brown.